Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour at 8:06. On this Tuesday morning, December 16th, 31 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City under mostly cloudy skies, 30 degrees under cloudy skies in Heber City. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Happy Tuesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for a look at your forecast for the Wasatch Back. We're looking at a mixture of sun and clouds as we go throughout today. Another warm one out there with Park City seeing high temperatures climbing into the upper 40s. We'll be looking at high temperatures in the low 50s for us in the Heber Valley with partly cloudy skies as well. Going into your Tuesday night, look for clouds to thicken up across the area. By the time you wake up on Wednesday morning, we're going to be tracking some increasing chances of some rain showers moving into the area. We'll be talking mainly rain showers, I think, especially for the first half of the day here. That rain will increase as we go throughout the day as a front moves through the area, so temperature will level out into the low to mid-40s in Park City and into the mid to upper 40s in the Heber Valley before dropping as we go into your Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday evening, and as we get towards your Wednesday night, they will continue to drop. So if there's moisture left around, which there looks like there could be, looks like we'll see that rain potentially changing over to some snow showers as we get into your Wednesday afternoon and evening in Park City. And by the time we get towards your Wednesday night and early Thursday morning, we could have a couple of snow showers even down towards the Heber Valley. Temperatures by Thursday morning will drop well down into the 20s, so any precipitation out there should be in the form of some snow. But snow ratios will mean that this will be a very dense snow, so nothing too heavy, and accumulating should remain fairly light across the area with this activity. We'll get a little bit of a break with a slight chance of a few showers as we go into your Thursday, and then we ramp it back up with another bout of moisture coming in as we go into your Friday and into your Saturday. And that means a chance of more of that potentially rain snow mix in the Park City area, and we'll see valley rainfall showing up in the Heber Valley, and that will continue into your early Saturday morning with still some chances of some of that rain sticking around with maybe a few mountain snow showers. But overall, snow levels will be rising again as we go throughout your Friday into Saturday. So not, again, looking at a significant event, but still some light accumulations will be possible. And that will continue with this off-and-on pattern into next week. That's your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
And with a look in the backcountry on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, we've got Greg. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. Once again, it's good to hear about some possible active weather returning. It has been a long, dry stretch that we've had any precipitation, and although the weather's been beautiful, I think a lot of us are ready for some snow. We need some snow. And currently, we're going with a generally low avalanche danger. It just reflects not much has happened over the past week or so. I do think there's some isolated slopes at the upper elevations where you could trigger an avalanche. These would be on steep, likely recently wind-loaded slopes, but generally it's an overall low danger. And you just heard Cedric talking about upcoming active weather, and the current snow that exists on northerly facing slopes has weakened considerably over the past week. And it's not going to take much of a load for this to become reactive. So messaging with today is that, yeah, we currently have generally low danger, but we have some precipitation coming, some water amounts coming. It's going to be heavier, dense snow, but it's going to contain reasonable amounts of water. So we're going to be putting a load on top of this weak existing snow. We're also expecting a lot of winds as well. So just going forward, generally low danger right now, but expecting a rising avalanche danger. I don't think we're talking a high danger. I don't think we're at that point yet, although we'll see what happens this weekend, and we'll see how the current weak snow reacts to minor accumulations Wednesday into Thursday. That'll give us a good sign of what we can expect with more snow and wind forecast for the weekend and into next week.
Okay, thanks, Greg. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Leslie. Bye-bye.
Stay tuned. In just a few minutes, we'll be checking in with Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybow, taking a look at this week's County Council meeting agenda. Author and local resident Elizabeth Smart talking about her new book that comes out today, Detours, a memoir of survival to empower readers to navigate life's detours and find purpose after adversity. Then singer-songwriter and founder of Free Dog, Brian Friedman, with details on his upcoming Solstice concert. And while Summit County is now officially the owner of 834 acres of ecologically significant ranch land in the Camas Meadows, the county announced late yesterday it had closed the $25 million purchase that had been pending for almost 3 years. It sets the stage for the perpetual conservation of the property situated at the entrance to Camas on State Route 248 and the headwaters of the Weber River. Summit County says the land is home to animals like elk and mule deer, plus migratory water birds such as sandhill cranes. The Ure family homesteaded there in the late 1800s. Since then, it's also supported cattle and dairy. The county has pledged much of the land on both sides of State Route 248 will remain a working farm. It says it may sell or lease the North and South Meadows to accomplish that goal. The county's working with the nonprofit Summit Land Conservancy to put conservation easements on the property prior to any sale. One such easement, which bans nearly all development, already went on the meadows north of the road last month. Part of the property south of the road has also been earmarked for hiking, biking, and equestrian trails. From a funding perspective, the Ure Ranch is one big jigsaw puzzle. The county acquired portions of the ranch with different money, which will affect future use. Of the roughly $25 million purchase price, $7 million came from a 2021 voter-approved open space bond. The county also says $10 million came from its transient room tax, a sales tax on hotel rooms and vacation homes, and $210,000 came from transportation sales taxes. $500,000 came from the Utah Outdoor Recreation Initiative, $6.2 million from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and $2.5 million from the Federal Land and Water Conservation Fund. Summit County made its initial down payment to begin the purchase price in the spring of 2023. Closing the deal took longer than expected, partly because it involved federal funds and the federal government temporarily shut down this year. County staff were able to extend the closing date by a year. Summit County and the Summit Land Conservancy, both financial supporters of KPCW. Well, the Wasatch County meets tomorrow at 4 o'clock, and on the phone with a preview of the meeting, I have Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. Good morning, Dustin.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the council did not approve next year's budget last week. How come?
We were waiting, actually. Our last meeting was 2 weeks ago, and we wanted to discuss whether or not the council wanted to pursue the truth and taxation increase for Parks and Recreation. We recommended that they some changes to the budget that did not require a truth and taxation hearing, that required some changes to the county's budget. So what you'll see on this week's meeting is the final budget that'll include some adjustments to ensure that we're contributing some additional funds to Parks and Recreation so they didn't have to do a tax increase.
Oh, okay. Now, what about the sheriff's budget? Was that all squared away?
Yeah, I think based on the council's feedback, we'll be making some reductions to the number of staff that are authorized in the 2026 budget. We'll be removing one of the part-time positions that was requested and one of the full-time patrol officers.
Okay, and just because of funding, is that why you needed to do that, or?
What we proposed to the council, including all those positions, was a balanced budget. I think overall the council's concerned just at the rate of change, and not that we can't afford those positions, but what we're proposing right now is that we set aside the funds that would have been used for those positions for future capital needs. Right now we're undertaking a master planning process at the sheriff's office, and we expect to need some funds for that project. So that's the idea at the moment, at least.
Okay, the sheriff had originally asked for $2.2 million in new funding, and so I guess that takes that down to about 2.1 if we're just pushing off one patrol
officer.
Yeah,
about that, yeah. In that range, yeah.
Okay, so any other changes made based on the additional discussion the council had?
No, I think those were the two main changes the council's requested. I think there are some other kind of minor changes, but we'll go through those in detail with the council on our meeting tomorrow.
Okay. Let's see. Courthouse expansion, the first phase was done. So what happens now? Does everybody move into that new space while the old space now goes under renovation?
Yeah. So we have the old district court will become the new county justice court. And so they have to renovate that space to adapt it to our needs. Part of it is we're splitting the space between our probation and then county justice court staff as well. And then there was an addition built in the new section that is also for the attorney's office, but a portion of the front end of the attorney's office is in the old justice court portion. So they have to remodel that as well, so that then the justice court staff can relocate, and then the attorney's office staff will likewise relocate into that facility.
Okay. I mean, is that taking place right away now, or is there?
Yeah. I think it's already underway. They're beginning the remodel. I think they've closed down what has been the front door so that they can conduct that remodel. They'll go through that space. Right now, the public entrance is on the north side of the building, and we have some temporary offices on that end of the building as well for the Justice Court staff while we're renovating that older portion.
All right, so what is the timeline for the second phase?
I think we expect to be complete with the entirety of the project by July of this next year.
Okay, and again, that we've heard the total project cost is $23 million?
Yeah, that's how much we borrowed. About half of that funding will come from the state because about half of the new facility is for the state district court.
So why did you have to borrow the entire $23 million?
Because the state, actually in Wasatch County, the state leases the court from the county. In other counties, the state courts own their own court. Ever since we have constructed this facility back in the 90s, the state court system has leased it from us. So it's actually a Wasatch County facility. So we're the ones who are building it. We get the benefit of owning that asset. And then we have a long-term lease with the state courts to occupy the space.
Okay, and that's what basically for the bond, the lease revenue payments are coming in to pay off that bond.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Let's see, I think there was some concern about making it safer to turn into the building. You're working with UDOT to do what?
So UDOT is actually in the process of building a lighted intersection at that kind of south entrance where you can turn into the hospital. There will be a lighted intersection there, and I think that will make it a lot easier for egress and entrance into that property for both hospital users and for the sheriff's office and justice court.
Okay, so when does that get installed? Any idea?
I know UDOT was actually aiming for this fall, but it got pushed back. So I think they expect in the springtime to be able to complete that light. They're also doing an expansion, a lane widening project through that area. So it's being done in conjunction with the other changes they're making there.
Okay. There are several public hearings set for tomorrow's meeting. Of course, the budget public hearing, one final opportunity for residents to speak on that. Any others that you wanted to highlight?
Yeah, I think it's worth some of the things. Most of it is related to planning items that were on our planning commission last week. I think the ones that are of interest maybe to some of the public are about our open space preservation code that allows for some clustering. This is the first property that is actually looking to take advantage of a new clustered preservation area that the county created and looking to tweak it. I think some of the tweaks that they'd like to make, we agree with, that having some flexibility in, for instance, like the frontage of the lots. But overall, I think we would like to see it continue to be preserved through a third-party conservation easement. And then we'll probably talk through some of the details about, you know, whether that is sufficiently attractive to developers to ensure that we do get this perpetual preservation as they develop these properties.
Yeah, and I saw that where planning staff feels like the proposal to not require a third-party nonprofit conservation holder is not in the best interest of the county. However, you did allow that for what, the Jordan Ridge property? I mean, what's the difference?
Yeah, well, we actually haven't completed the Jordan L. Ridge process right now. I think the last feedback we had from our council was to continue to work with Heber City and the property owner to make whatever improvements are possible. I think that includes the possibility of a third-party conservation easement. One of the key differences between the Jordan L. Ridge and this other one is Wasatch County is the exclusive land use authority for projects that take place in the unincorporated county. So this project, for instance, that's on our agenda. But in the Jordan L. Ridge, Wasatch County has zero land use authority. And so we really only have a seat at the table based on the agreement of Heber City and the underlying property owner. So the dynamics are a little bit different. And I think overall, we feel like we want to do whatever we can to preserve the Jordanelle open space and other spaces. Even if sometimes that's maybe less ideal than what could happen otherwise, we still feel like there's a role for the county to play in preserving these spaces.
And sticking on with the planning process, where are we with the general plan update?
Yeah, so actually one of the items on our public hearing is related to this, in that there is a section of the new general plan that is coming before the council. Specifically, it's the water conservation portion. This is actually required by state code that we have to update it anyways, but this is in the new format of the new general plan. So we had a meeting, I want to say last month, with the council trying to get their feedback on general density trends and what their comfort level was with a few different scenarios, largely to just drive discussion. And overall, that discussion trended towards as low density as is possible. And so right now our planning staff are working through some language that would help, I think, make that a reality through the general plan, and we'll bring it back to the county council and the planning commission as we iterate on that process. So right now we're in the heavy writing stage. We've completed largely the primary public input, and then it's the policy development that we're working on now, and we're hoping to be completed by mid to the latter part of next year.
Okay, so that's the timeline then. Wanted to ask you any updates with regard to the Gun Club Road. Have we settled that?
I haven't been directly involved. I know that the property developer has been working with Summit County, and I was under the impression that they were very near to working out a deal on that property. I think part of it, Summit County was hoping to wrap up the your property closing, and which I have heard that they have just done, which is great news. And so that simplifies it a little bit, because it's no longer contingent on something that happens in the future. Now Summit County owning that property can ensure that whatever happens there, they're comfortable with and they have control of.
All right. And then kind of looking ahead to next year, anything on the legislative front for you at this point?
You know, every legislative session is an interesting exercise in trying to understand exactly what the state's priorities are. I think this year they have done a good job in signaling a key area that they are discussing is property taxes. This is something that our voters are very sensitive to. That's why we did not do any truth and taxation increases this last year. But it's one that I expect that the state will probably have a lot of discussion and maybe even some bills and or constitutional amendments that would address property taxes. And I don't know exactly what form those will take, but those will be something that we'll be watching really closely, because any changes to the property tax system affect not just the county as the entities responsible for assessing and collecting taxes, but also as one of the many public entities that utilize the truth in taxation system to ensure that what our revenues look like and what the services we're providing, and any changes to that have the potential to impact the services that citizens receive. So
Okay, stay tuned. Yeah. Hey, and I never heard, but did Wasatch County get the waiver it needed from lawmakers during the special session on your council districting?
Yes, actually, Wasatch County and based on the change, I think they also grandfathered in Salt Lake County in our forms of government, meaning that all new counties, if they were to change to our form of government or in the council executive form, would be required to have 100% districts.
Okay, let's see. And coming up, you'll have, I'm guessing, a county council retreat at some point. Has that been scheduled?
No, right now, because the county is on a calendar year, so we're concluding our budgeting process. I think we will have some discussion later in the spring. That's about when we had it last year. That'll probably be in conjunction with some plan that we're having around our interlocal meetings that we're shifting to kind of a semi-annual, maybe bigger bang of a local interlocal meeting.
Okay. And just an opportunity. I mean, if you were to sum up 2025 for Wasatch County, what would you have to say about the year?
I think overall, we're really pleased with the progress that we're making in a lot of different areas. The county continues to be very strong financially. That's why we're able to build the courthouse and make all of the changes to our services without having to go back to property taxpayers for increases. I think I am particularly proud of Wasatch County's new mission, vision, and values statement. I think it does a great job of encapsulating in a very succinct way who we are and what our role is, and it communicates with our staff, I think, some very clear values about who we want to be. And we're still in the process of rolling some of those things out, but those are some things that first jump out to mind of things that we're really grateful to have been able to accomplish. There were some difficult things. You know, we spent a lot of this year focusing on issues in the sheriff's office. I feel like we've already, you know, begun, dived into and started to make progress and making improvements there. And actually on our agenda tomorrow is some discussion from the sheriff about things that they have been doing in the sheriff's office as well.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Not this morning.
All right. Thanks so much for your time. Happy holidays.
Thank you. You as well.
That's Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. Local resident Elizabeth Smart is known around the world for transforming personal tragedy into a powerful voice for healing and hope. In her new book, Detours, released today, she reflects on the unexpected paths that life can take and how even the most painful turns can lead to growth, purpose, and resilience. The memoir explores what it means to rebuild after trauma and how to move forward when life doesn't go according to plan. Elizabeth Smart joins us now to talk about Detours and the lessons she hopes readers will take from her journey. Good morning and thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
So as I mentioned, this is your third book. It follows your others, My Story, written in 2013 along with Chris Smart, and then followed up by Where There's Hope in 2018. So what does the title Detours mean to you? And when did you realize that detours were sort of the unifying theme of the book?
Well, I don't think I've ever met anyone whose life went exactly to plan. And I feel like there's so many comparisons between like life and roads, or, you know, like life is a highway, or, you know, just going along my journey. There's just so many comparisons. I felt like that really fit because as I've gone out and I have spoken and I've presented and I've met survivors and just people, I've had a lot of short stories shared with me, and a lot of people are asking me, well, how did you heal? Like, how have you moved forward? You seem like you're fine. You seem like you're great. Like, what did you do? And so when writing this book, as much as I could, I tried to come up with kind of the key elements that really made a difference in my own healing. And I kind of placed them as rest stops one might have along their journey. And I don't know, I just felt like the analogy between like driving along a road or going along a path just fit really well with this idea of our healing journey.
Yeah. And you don't only discuss detours. You use rest stops, rock slides, and destinations, I think, to make your point. So was there a particular moment or experience that kind of sparked the idea for this?
Well, I mean, I feel like everyone who lives in this area is quite familiar with the backup traffic in Parley's Canyon. And personally, I have never missed a flight or been... Yeah, I have never missed a flight due to my own mismanagement of time. And I was headed to the airport one day, and of course, there was an actual landslide in Parley's Canyon. Traffic was backed up, and I thought I was just going to miss the flight. And I remember someone mentioning there's some road at the back of Jeremy Ranch that you can still sneak down to the valley. And I was like, I've never seen it. I've never tried it. But let's just go look for it, because at this rate, I'm not going to make it to the airport. I mean, once we started down that road, I began to have second thoughts as well. So then there was that whole experience of taking this major detour, which I did get to the airport. It was close, but I made it. And then just having all these other experiences along the way, having my own rock slides. My parents, and about 7 years ago, went through a divorce, and that was really difficult. And that definitely felt like a major detour, because they had always been such a stable part of my life. I had just always kind of taken them for granted. Like, they were my foundation. They were the constants in my life. And all of a sudden now it's like holidays, and you're kind of like, ooh, like mom, dad, The family always kind of felt like a little bit incomplete because one of them is always missing. Anyway, all of these things just kind of happened, and I just kind of was like, I'm going to give it a try. And if it's a total flop, it's a total flop. But I'm going to do my best, and hopefully people just see it as a friend or just suggestions, helps, because I certainly don't know everything, and I'm certainly still learning and growing myself.
Yeah. Well, society often celebrates, I guess, linear success stories. And I guess, how do you think detours can teach us that straight line paths don't always guarantee success?
Oh, I don't know anyone whose success is straight line. I don't know anyone whose healing journey is straight line. I mean, that has not been my experience at all. Although I will say, you know, we have so much social media, and you really get to curate what you show on social media. So when you like look at other people, or even if you look at me, I mean, I'm probably not going to post my worst moments out of the day. Like, you might see my best moments. And so that gives the illusion of always being happy or having just like a linear progress. And kind of one of the first rest stops that I talk about in my book is to grieve the lost paths. I mean, we all have these visions. I know I certainly did, where you think this is like your life is just going to go a certain way, and then it can be really devastating when you realize that that is a path you can no longer follow, that you have to figure out a new way. And it's very easy, I feel like, to get stuck at that point and just feel like there is no moving past it. And so I think really the first step is to understand that it's okay to grieve what you've lost, the life that you thought you were planning on having. And that's okay to be sad and upset and like mourn that loss.
The book feels deeply personal and also very relatable. And I guess, how did you decide which experience to share publicly and which ones still to keep private?
I'm not sure that it was like a conscious thought. I mean, I always want to be respectful to everyone. And so I really just tried to stick to my personal experiences. And I feel like with my personal experiences, I realized years ago when I first started public speaking, one time I forgot all my notes and I was walking on stage and I was like, oh my gosh, what am I gonna say? Like, I can't believe I forgot this. Like, I don't know what to do. And then I had like this moment where I was like, okay, nobody knows your story better than you. It's going to be okay. And you don't have to share anything you're not comfortable sharing. And I guess that has just kind of stuck with me. I don't need to share anything I'm not comfortable sharing. And that's true in this book as well.
So how do you think this book differs from your two earlier ones?
Well, my first book very much was my story. I mean, that's what it's called. I talked about what happened when I was kidnapped and what captivity was like and what coming home was like. My second book, I took the questions that I most commonly ask, like, have you forgiven your captors? And like, how do you find hope? And how do you... It was just all of these most commonly asked questions. How do you not just get stuck reliving in the past all the time? And then I felt like, you know, maybe not everyone is going to resonate with me. I mean, I try to always be relatable, but maybe some other person's experience is just going to be so far removed from mine. They'll just be like, this book does me no good because we're just too different. So I tried to go out with that book and interview people that I admire and who have been through incredibly difficult situations themselves, so that even if someone didn't connect with me, they'd connect with someone else. And then my third book, this Detours book, I mean, it really is more focused specifically on my healing journey and just, you know, life doesn't always go how you plan, and that can be so hard. But don't give up, because, you know, we do find new paths forward. And although they're not the original plan that we had for ourselves, it doesn't mean that they can't be better or that we can't find joys and beauties that we wouldn't have otherwise experienced.
Yeah. So, I mean, thinking about it, I mean, who do you think this book is for? Someone sort of in the middle of a detour or someone looking back on one?
I hope it's for everyone. I hope everyone can find some kind of connection or be like, oh, that's a new way of thinking of that. Or it's okay for me to feel sad at this moment in my life. Or, you know what, actually, I still have a lot of really great things in my life despite this tragedy that has come into my life.
Yeah. Was there a particular chapter that was especially difficult or maybe especially healing to write?
I just feel like articulating, because I know what I think in my brain, but figuring out how to articulate that correctly on paper, I feel like is a process. And it can be very, very difficult because I feel like everyone today can understand when someone's like, oh, well, texts are just so ambiguous. Like you can translate them so many ways. A book is maybe not quite as ambiguous, but at the same time, I want to be very clear about what my message is. So I feel like each chapter had its own difficulties.
Yeah. So your writing process, I mean, is it this information that you maybe have pulled from journaling, or is it that you actually kind of sat down and like, I'm writing a book and would go and that's what you do every day?
I don't journal. During my captivity, I was forced to journal, and then I felt like it was used against me in the trial, and so I have hated journaling ever since then. I did absolutely have someone help me along the way because, like, I did not study, you know, writing in school. Like, honestly, I never thought I would write any books in my life. So I definitely had someone who was like, okay, Elizabeth, like, think about this. Like, what do you think about this? Or how, like, I understand what you're saying, but we need a little bit more of an on-ramp. Like, let's, like, talk about this. Let's, like, massage this a little bit. So I definitely had someone who helped me, and I'm so grateful for that because otherwise it would probably be a discombobulated mess of ideas.
So do you see the book as part of your advocacy work, or is it really kind of just another step in your healing?
I'd say both, really. I'd say both because, you know, one of the saddest things I come across in my advocacy is when I meet victims and it's not that they died from what happened to them, but there has been a huge loss of life and that just breaks my heart. And so I want it to be a hug for them. I want them to be like, oh my gosh, life is still worth living. And my journey is different from anybody else's. And I'm not going to compare myself. I'm not going to say 6 months from now, I should be completely better. But I'm going to figure out my own journey. And I'm not going to give up no matter what, because I deserve happiness and I deserve love. And I'm worthy of every good thing in life.
So do you have any book signings planned for the Park City area?
No, but I'm open to the idea.
Okay. And then do you take the book on tour? Is that what you got planned?
So when I speak, I will often, almost all the time, do a book signing afterwards. So I'm excited. I'm hopeful for the future. And I hope it does make a difference for someone.
Yeah. And probably a little premature to be asking you, but I mean, what's next? Are there more stories that you want to tell?
You know, every time I've done something, I'm like, this is it. This is the end. Like, I'm not doing anything more. So I feel like my life lesson might be don't speak in statements, because every time you say you're not going to do something, you inevitably end up doing that very thing. So I'm not going to say that there'll never be anything else in my future. At this precise moment, I don't have another book floating in my head at this very moment, but I'm not going to say never. I feel like I always have projects in like my advocacy and my foundation work. So there's always stuff, and I could talk to you till like next year about all the things I hope for and we're working towards.
Okay. Well, good luck with that. Good luck with the book, and we appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
That's author and local resident Elizabeth Smart. Wasatch County just completed the first phase of a $23 million overhaul of its courthouse. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports what's new.
For the past year and a half, construction has been underway at the Wasatch County Justice Center, which houses 4th District Court, Juvenile Court, and the County Justice Court. The original Justice Center was built in the 1990s near the Heber Valley Hospital. Once the expansion is complete, the facility will have added about 20,000 square feet to its existing 12,000 square foot building. The first phase of the project opened Friday. It includes new state courtrooms, staff spaces, and attorney offices. Richard Breitenbecker, who's managing the project, said during a tour of the new facilities Monday, the expansion will make operations more efficient and flexible. Previously, District Justice and Juvenile Courts all had to share one courtroom. Now judges will have more say over their schedules.
It both increases the quality of life for those working in it. It increases the quality of the experience for those who are coming to court.
District Court handles all civil cases and criminal felonies, as well as domestic cases such as divorces and adoptions. Justice Court deals with misdemeanors and violations of local laws. And Juvenile Court works with anyone under 18 accused of breaking the law. That mix of cases means both state and county employees use the Justice Center. The state will pay about half of the project's $23 million price tag.
And that includes everything, the permitting, the design, all of the things that go along with it. Our actual construction cost is just over $20 million.
Breitenbecker says every aspect of the new facility has been carefully planned by design firm EDA Architects, from the height of the barriers around the jury box to the size of the stones in the stormwater retention pond outside.
If you make the stones too large, they could potentially be used as weapons. And if you make them too small, then they're very easy to hurl at the building. And these are the kinds of thought processes that you often don't have on a typical building.
How the courtrooms look and sound were important considerations too. Wood lattices in the ceilings and gently sloping walls help prevent the rooms from echoing. The warmth of the wood in the judge's dais and the other furniture is meant to make the courtrooms feel calmer and more welcoming. The larger building will offer more privacy to people visiting the courthouse. One staff member said that will be especially helpful for juvenile court, since the identities of those under 18 need to be protected. While construction work continues, people coming to the courthouse for hearings will enter through the north end of the building. Monday morning, Oakland construction teams were doing demolition work in the old courthouse. The next phases of construction will create renovated spaces for the Wasatch County Justice Court, attorneys, and staff. So far, the project is on time and under budget. Breitenbecker estimates the expansion will be finished in August 2026. To pay for the project, Wasatch County issued a $23.4 million lease revenue bond in 2024. It will be repaid with the state's help over the next 20 years. Breitenbecker says the county does not plan to raise property taxes to pay for the expansion.
And that's because the state contribution covers a lot of it. And then we've also got other revenues coming in from things like the Deer Valley area.
The sheriff's office and the county jail are also part of the Justice Center, but are not included in this project. Separately, Wasatch County Sheriff Jared Rigby has said he would like to make about $1 million worth of safety improvements to the jail. To see photos of the courthouse expansion so far, visit kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Unionized ski patrollers at one Colorado resort are working without a contract and say they will strike if its owner doesn't meet their demands. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports.
Almost 1 year after patrollers at Park City Mountain walked off the job during contract negotiations, the ski patrol union at Telluride Ski and Golf Resort is poised to do the same.
As much as we really still hold out a glimmer of hope, it is becoming more and more likely that we're going to strike.
Speaking with KPCW Saturday, December 13th, Union President Graham Hoffman says the patrollers have not set a date to walk out. They will do so in advance so that the Telluride community isn't caught by surprise. According to Hoffman, the union voted unanimously to authorize a strike back in November. That was after months of contract negotiations, which are now stalled. The previous contract expired August 31st. This month, the union asked the company Artelski for a final and best offer. According to the Colorado Sun, 99% of union membership voted to reject it December 8th. And as of the 15th, the union says it's been radio silence from the company since. Telski spokesperson Nancy Clark told KPCW in a statement that if the ski patrol chooses to strike, everyone at Telluride suffers. She predicted guest cancellations and the loss of seasonal staff if that happens. Patrollers want first-year wages set at around $30 an hour, an almost 28% pay bump, paid time off, stipends for health insurance and equipment. The union says, including the benefits, that works out to a roughly 35% raise. According to a company FAQ page, Telski's final offer included a 13% raise and guaranteed cost of living adjustments for the upcoming seasons. The Telluride contract dispute has echoes of last winter's strike at Vail-owned Park City Mountain, where ski patrollers did not work for 13 days during the post-Christmas rush. Although skiers and riders with a full Epic Pass get 7 days at Telski, Vail Resort CEO Rob Katz says no revenue from the privately owned resort goes to Vail.
I think access to Telluride helps pass sales. You know, obviously, you know, we're very hopeful that, that they can find a way to resolve, the differences and that they have an amazing ski season ahead.
The Park City Ski Patrol Union eventually got increased pay and benefits. Asked if that makes Telluride Patrol optimistic or not, Hoffman says it established a precedent, but that Telluride's situation is different since Telski's private.
There's no investors to lean on because this isn't Vail. There's no board. There's just our owner, and he is unwilling to really to talk with us.
For the town of Telluride, the looming ski patrol strike is the next chapter in an ongoing conflict between some residents and resort owner Chuck Horning. The Denver Post reported in October that some locals want to, quote, Chuck, amid deteriorating trust and accusations of sexual misconduct or assault from multiple women. The Post said most sources it spoke to want Horning to sell Telski. The resort spokesperson said the 81-year-old had no plans to do so. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, the winter solstice will be celebrated Saturday with local singer-songwriter Brian Friedman and his band Free Dog. Brian joins me now on the phone. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Leslie.
Yeah, so what inspired you to create your solstice concerts?
It was actually inspired. I lived in Santa Barbara for 4 years in my 20s, and they celebrated the solstice. It was like bigger than the 4th of July some years. It was a huge deal there, and I just thought it would be really awesome to bring some sort of energy like that to Park City and do it through music.
Okay, so it's going to be when and where?
It's this Saturday, December 20th at the Prospector Theater. Doors open at 6:30 p.m., and we've got a really cool lineup. Simply B is going to start off the night. He's like a one-man funk band that does a lot of looping and pedal work. And then we have another special guest, Megan Blue, who's an incredible soul singer and blues singer, who's going to be joining us for the night. So we're really excited.
Okay. Your Free Dog will come on stage about what time?
It's a great question. Usually we come on around between 8:30 and 9, sometime in there. So, you know, you'll be home and in bed before midnight.
Okay. And tickets are how much?
It's $35 for GA, $100 for VIP. And the VIP is seated and you have your own bartender, unobstructed views, that kind of thing. And the other cool thing, we have a really awesome giveaway. Kesley Skis and Beringia is giving away a full kit, ski gear, and jacket and pants. So, you know, it's kind of a fun, you know, ski vibe, and obviously celebrating the longest night of the year.
Yeah. Now, do your solstice concerts differ from your typical Free Dog performances?
Yeah, they do. I would say, these are special to us, and we tend to like really try to increase the production value on these shows. So, you know, we're bringing in a much bigger sound system this year, a really nice light package. Our goal is to make the room look like a snow globe this year. So, I would say that's the biggest difference, you know, if we're just playing like City Park or, I guess a gun for hire, if you will. It's a little different. You know, these are a little bit more festive in our opinion, and we like to do it up. And thanks to our sponsors for making that happen. You know, like that's what gives us the opportunity to increase the production value.
Sure. Now, does the set list feature any new material?
Yeah, it does actually. There's two new songs that we've been working on with the band that we've been mulling over for a couple of years now. It's taken some time to get to something that everybody is on board with, which is part of the collaborative process, I guess. And so we're excited to unleash that. And then, the big addition really is having Megan sit in with us as a backup singer and taking some lead on some stuff as well. And we have a couple of new really fun covers that we've been working on with her. And we're excited.
Great. So it sounds like there are beverages, adult beverages for sale there. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So it's full bar, adult beverages. We've got, awesome. Like we've got, Kettle One, Mi Campo, Tequila, Bullet Bourbon, Park City Brewery, and a big tip of the hat to Old Town Cellars for being big sponsors on that front. And Top Shelf will be running the bar service. So, Casey obviously, is well known in town and takes good care of us, and we're stoked to have them on board.
Okay. I remember last year you were talking about a dress code, one for this year. Are you still kind of putting that vibe out?
yeah. Come on now. We got to dress festive. White, blue, sequins, brighten up the night, I guess, really is what we're going for. So dress festive and that's the name of the game. Whatever you got in your closet that's fun and bright and shiny, bring it out. Why not?
Okay. What's next for Free Dog after the Solstice concert? More shows, any new recordings or new directions?
We'll take a little breather probably. I'm going to be traveling a little bit for like a month and a half after the holiday. We definitely will be working on some new material. We have two new EPs that haven't been released yet. So we're hoping to release one of those either spring or summer, most likely summer solstice. And then, we'll have some shows in between, but nothing set in stone at this moment.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, I just would love to just give, the rest of the sponsors a shout out for helping us make this production happen. Motherlode and Park City, Cole Sport, Sammy's, Hentz, and obviously Mountain Town Music and Lococo. So we're really stoked to have everyone on board. It's truly like a community coming together. It was awesome just asking for help this year and everyone stepped up. So hope you guys can make it and come on out and see us on Saturday and have a good, unapologetically local hang.
Okay. Brian, thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Cheers. Thanks, Leslie.
Brian Friedman and his band Free Dog again performing at the Prospector Theater Saturday night. You can find out more by going on to Eventbrite for tickets and information. While fall-like temperatures are not ideal for snow sports, they've been good news for contractors working on two major municipal recreation projects. Although the new community center and city park isn't expected to open until late 2026, the Park City Council last week approved the building's new name, The Mine at City Park. Park City Recreation Director Ken Fisher says the $19 million, 15,000 square foot facility should start taking shape soon.
There was a lot of utility work that had to be done from rerouting sewer lines, new water lines, bringing all the utilities into the site needed, but it's really been moving along well. You'll start to see that building going vertical here in the next week or two. They'll be starting all the brickwork and block.
Once completed, the community center will provide additional space for summer camp and year-round events, including birthday parties and other community happenings. Fisher says part of the building will feature a 25-foot ceiling and a small gymnasium for indoor ball sports. Construction is also continuing on two new outdoor swimming pools at the PC Mark. That project carries a $10 million price tag.
If anyone that's been to the Mark and looked out there, you can see where they're installing the panels for the walls of the pool, and you can see the shape of that leisure pool. So that is also moving along quickly. They've gotten all the plumbing done on that, and they will start to backfill that and dig out the lap pool, hopefully in the next couple of weeks here.
The pools are scheduled to open by June 1st of next year. Meanwhile, Fisher says the city is still negotiating with a developer who's interested in building indoor pickleball courts at Quinn's Junction. Fisher says the city needs to finalize a ground lease for the property, and he expects that to happen soon. Spots are still available for one of the 2 weeks of the upcoming winter break camp.
The second week is already sold out, and there's a wait list. So if you need that second week, I encourage you to get on that wait list and see if we can get you in there. The first week goes, we have spots, and that runs December 22nd, 23rd, and 26th. In that they have daily field trips. They're going to go down to the Living Planet Aquarium. They do Hangtime Adventure Park, and they go to Tracy Aviary.
The Mark will be closing early on Christmas Eve at 1 p.m. and at 6 p.m. on New Year's Eve. The facility is closed totally on Christmas Day, and on New Year's Day will open at 9 a.m.